Hello and welcome to episode 85 of Linux After Dark. I'm Joe.
I'm Chris.
I'm Gary.
And I'm May.
Welcome back, folks.
She, her.
Gary, you were recently talking to a friend and you had something of a realization.
Yeah, and my realization was that normal non-FOSS folk do not understand licenses at all. So my friend's point was that the Postgres project appears to get way more contributions from large businesses than the MySQL project. And I don't necessarily think that that's because it's a better or worse database engine. My supposition here is that it's down to the fact that Postgres is much more permissively licensed, and therefore it's easier for them to attract those large corporate contributors. He said he doesn't understand any of this licensing nonsense and that he doesn't care. Discuss.
Well, a bit of a peek behind the curtain. We were talking about this before we started recording. And Chris, you had something of a confession.
Yeah, that's right. I don't understand licenses. And in fact, I was going to ask Joe to pick an appropriate member of the podcast family to discuss it. And here we are doing it now. I'm not as bullshy as your friend, Gary. It's not that I don't care about them, but I will admit that I do not understand them anywhere near as much as I feel like I should do.
I don't understand all the details of them, but I understand the two basic types. You've got permissive licenses and copyleft licenses.
See, I didn't even understand what that is. Go on, expand.
Expound.
A permissive license is the most free, don't at me, license. So that means you can take the code from a project and do whatever you want with it. You can modify it, use it, distribute it, and change the license of it. So you could take an MIT licensed bit of code, make some changes to it, and then release it as proprietary software.
I see. So I would never have to have any form of attribution. I could make my whatever I wanted out of it, do the thing, and I never, ever have to say, this started with me looking at Joe's code.
The MIT license requires that you have a copy of the MIT license, the entire header of that file, available somewhere. So like if you go in your car's information and versioning system stuff, it'll list all of the MIT headers that they used in that software.
Yeah, that's familiar to me. Where you go into the about section of something with embedded firmware, a car's a good example, or a streaming device, or a network attached hard drive, anything that has an info or about page, TVs, they'll have, you know, often our friend Roger Light Mosquito will scroll up and various other things. So that's familiar to me. So that's always or quite often down to MIT licensing, right?
Most open source licenses do have that requirement. There is a variant of the MIT license that was, I think, created at the same time by Amazon and someone else, where they just take off the attribution section. It's called the MIT Zero most of the time. And you can use that code without any attribution. It's the, I do not care, please just take it license.
Some of the BSD licenses, I think, are a bit like that. The joke that they have is, it's yours to do what you want with, and if you break it, you get to keep both halves. Whereas a copyleft license means that if you make changes, you can only release them under that license. Broadly speaking, there's obviously different versions of it, different levels of restriction on your freedom that maintain the freedom of others.
I think it's because I've never in earnest written my own code and pushed it up anywhere. I've been much more of a consumer. Now, since I started doing my current job, I do some bash scripting, and I will commit that to Git. We will use version control and everything, but most of that is on our internal GitHub Enterprise instance. We don't make that public facing. So we haven't thought about where it lies and where it might be reused as much. So I think that's part of where this comes from. But it is something I should know, because if I'm taking things and using them, I should know what I'm allowed to do as I do that.
But as Gary says, most people just don't care about this. They don't even think for one second about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I think if I tried to have this conversation with the majority of people, they'd be like, I honestly don't care. Because, you know, you go to a repository of code and you don't have to bring up a VPN and go to, you know, the piratecodebay.net to get the code. I can see why a lot of people are just like, well, it's there. I can get it. I didn't have to say who I was to get it. Like, that's fine, right? But no, it's not. You have to be more careful depending on what you choose to then do with it.
Well, it depends what you do with it, right? Like, if it's only for personal use, then it pretty much doesn't matter, does it? No one's going to know.
Your morals, won't they?
Well, yeah, but most of the licenses are really about distribution, aren't they? Redistribution. And most of the licenses say you can make changes for yourself if you're just going to run it on your own internal system. But it's when you start publishing that and distributing it to other people that it matters.
Here's where it becomes tricky, right? In a recent example from my work, it's loved and hated equally, I think hated more, but there is a distribution of Python called Anaconda, which started as a way to get different versions of Python. It's bloated, it's a mess. It's basically like a distribution of Linux now. You can get compilers, you can get FFmpeg, you can create Conda environments. It's become really a bloated mess, but whether you like it or not, it underpins a hell of a lot of Python-based GPU AI machine learning workflows now, because it's, and I'm holding my fingers up here, easy. There's loads of bad things about it, but it's very, very widely used. And they have followed the trend of 2024 and started pulling an Oracle. So suddenly institutions, including research institutions and academic institutions, will get an email or a letter saying, we're suing you. And it's very much the Oracle approach. It's not, you know, saying, we need to talk about this. They say, no, you have more than 200 people using our, and it's specifically the channels with which you get things from it. You're breaching our license and you owe us money because it's commercial use, because more than 200 people have been detected, just like Oracle with the VirtualBox and the extension pack, accessing these channels, which are called the defaults channels. So if you've been doing that stuff and thinking it's fine, and then suddenly lawyers send you letters, and they can presumably do this because they changed the terms of the agreement in 2020 silently, but they were only just calling it in. And I feel like someone has said, you do realize that gives you permission to make money out of people. And they've gone, oh, oh, right, does it? Oh, maybe we should do that then. And I'm always aware in a code repository, there will be a license file in most of them in capital letters. Do I read it? No. Should I? Absolutely. Like, you can email in if you want and tell me off and I will accept being told off for it. But I don't think I'm strange in terms of people cloning code repositories. It's not good. I'm not saying it's good, but I think it is common.
I think even in terms of people who do this for a living and use code that they didn't write, and even people who know about the licenses, a lot of times will mess it up. And sometimes that's a convenient mess up because the lawyers, you know, want your company to make money. But sometimes it's just, hey, I'm lazy and I want this library. It's GPLv3. And then you say, no, no, we can't do that. We can't ship that unless you want our code to be GPLv3 as well.
So this is where I get confused because I don't know the licenses. So what's the problem there with what you just said?
The GPL is known as a viral license, and its virality is based on a linking layer, which is a technical term that would be very interesting to describe in a court of law. But if you are linking against that piece of GPL code as a shared object file or static linking or whatever, unless you can somehow use the system library exception, your code is also then considered under the GPL version 3 license. The GPL v2 works about the same way. The v3 license kind of added a weird, if you ship this in a product that meets the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act standards in the US, you need to give source code no matter what. Doesn't matter if it's system library or what, but that also hasn't been tested in a court of law. And I'm not a lawyer, I might add. This isn't legal advice.
But yeah, the bottom line is, if you use GPL v3 code within your code, then you have to license your code as GPL v3, more or less.
Mm-hmm. Or LGPL 3 would work as well. There's this license compatibility thing that everyone disagrees what's compatible with what anyway. So most people just kind of fly by the seat of their pants.
Yeah, like with ZFS, for example, that is open source under the CDDL, I think.
Mm-hmm. Cuddle.
whereas Linux is GPLv2, and they are both open source licenses, but they are not compatible.
Yes, they're specifically not compatible because Sun specifically wanted them not to be.
Yeah, whereas Ubuntu and Canonical just said, ah, fuck it, it'll be fine. And it turns out that so far, so good on that.
Yeah, so that's why when I was testing Debian and ZFS, you get that huge blue warning screen putting the responsibility on you. Whereas, and I need to get this right because I know that Proxmox devs get annoyed about this. ZFS isn't in kernels as such in Ubuntu, but the kernel modules are available, which is what makes it much easier to install, is what I gather. They don't like it when people say, oh, it's just in kernel. That's not quite true. But yes, they are technically not fulfilling the license correctly, and they're putting themselves in a potential position where they could be sued.
Yeah, but it's been long enough now that they probably won't be.
Yeah, no one ever talks about it in any kind of public forum that might be listened to by lots of people to get their antenna up for them. So it's fine. I think it's fine.
People tried to kick up a fuss, but ultimately, like, the two licenses should be compatible, but they're just sort of deliberately not. And it's just...
I think the problem with this one specifically is because Linus has spoken up on it as well, hasn't he, a few years ago, and not in a good way. And I think, you know, this would be for our friends at 2.5 admins to discuss from a more knowledgeable standpoint, because I think Jim covered it on air when it came up. And I think he wrote an article for ours about it as well, saying that Linus didn't really understand the ins and outs of it as much as he thought he did. But when the leader of a project has said something like that, that's why it continues to rattle along without being resolved, I think.
Well, software licensing is quite a lot like quantum mechanics. Anyone who says they understand it is bullshitting you. Fully, that is. There's so many nuances, and like with all legal shit, there's not really a right and wrong, a correct and incorrect. It's all interpretation and precedent and shit like that. Okay, this episode is sponsored by people who support us with PayPal and Patreon. Go to linuxafterdark.net/support for details of how you can support us too. Patreon supporters have the option to listen to episodes without ads like this. And it's not just this show. There's Late Night Linux for news, discoveries, audience input, and misanthropy. 2.5 admins about system administration. Linux Matters for upbeat, family-friendly adventures. Linux Dev Time about developing with and for Linux. Hybrid Cloud Show for everything private and public cloud. And Ask the Hosts for off-topic questions from you. You can even get some episodes a bit early. We've got a lot going on, and it's only possible because of the people who support us. So if you like what we do and can afford it, it would be great if you could support us too at linuxafterdark.net/support.
So how do we make people care then? Because places like GitHub have a summary of their understanding of the license at the top of the license page if you look at it in a repository. But people clearly don't read it and don't understand it. And they just assume the thing is open source. Therefore, I can get the source and I can use it.
Well, how did that conversation go with your friend when you brought up the permissive license thing and he said, I don't understand that? Did you say, well...
Actually.
Well, actually, and explain the whole thing, or did you just say, ah, fair enough?
I just said, yeah, ah, fair enough. I mean, I wasn't going to try and get into it because I also don't understand it. But what I do understand is why one project might have attracted more large businesses as contributors than the other.
So is this where you start to get these weird terms like source available? Because that came up recently with Bitwarden, for example. There was a bit of a, you know, peanut gallery panic, as there tends to be, because somebody tried to build from the source code and it failed. And then someone else picked up on that because they raised it as a GitHub issue. And then there was kind of a panic that, oh, Bitwarden's going away like everything else I love in 2024. And it turned out to be not quite the case. And they hadn't really changed from what they were doing before, which is that the desktop applications were source available. And this is part of the reason that Vaultwarden, for example, had to change its name and has to be careful about how it's built. And it can't compile certain features that you pay Bitwarden for. But ultimately, people who are more knowledgeable and calmer were like, whoa, 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 as the Rage Brigade and Pitchfork camp gather momentum, they were like, nothing has actually changed here. You need to be careful. you may or may not like that Bitwarden has some source available elements, but what you can't do is accuse them of pulling a massive rug pull or switcheroo like other companies have, and it's been misunderstood. And they replied quite quickly and said, this is a bug.
Yeah.
We will resolve that bug, and the bug is now resolved. So as I gather, and I'll let you expand on this, but source available is a way for companies to try to stop people stealing things, right? Is that right, or is that unfair?
You're redefining, or I guess defining in the first place, what stealing is with a lot of source available and like Bustle business source licenses.
Mm.
Because open source, you're specifically saying taking this code is not stealing as long as you follow these terms.
Yeah, with source available, that is a company or an organization saying, here is the source code to our software. You can read it, you can study it, you can make sure that we're not doing any shenanigans with it, but it's not open source in the OSI approved sense. So the open source initiative has a bunch of licenses which they bless, and they say that a license has to meet certain criteria to be considered properly open source. Now, the source code for a source available license is open to be seen, but it's not open source.
I see. So it's giving people who use that a sort of sense of security. I can see what they're doing, but disallowing others from taking that and using it for something else, which if you're being much more pure about the whole concept of open source, is not very, very good, not very spirited, shall we say.
Yeah, you can't make any changes to it. You can't distribute it. It is just a record of this is the source code to this software.
Yep, pure source available. There is the business source license, which says, this is open source if you aren't doing this, or this with it, which isn't open source, and the OSI actually did come down on the correct side on that, don't at me.
I agree, yeah. You can't just say, this is open source unless you want to make bombs with it or whatever. That's just not open source. You have to, for good or ill, let people do whatever they want with your software for it to be open source, as long as they comply with the license of, you know, whether that's a GPL or crediting you or whatever.
Right. The way that we get around that then is with more social pressure. But if a company doesn't care about the license in the first place, why would they care about the social pressure?
Now, I'm really curious, Chris, as to why you don't know about this stuff. It seems really odd to me that you don't know about it.
Well, as I say, I think I did say earlier on, it's because I
don't care.
I just haven't cared. Yeah, I'll be perfectly honest. It's true because I haven't produced things that could be licensable. And yeah, I will throw critique at myself that I have been mostly a consumer. And I think there'll be lots of people that dislike me, if you see what I mean, for that. But that's because I'm much more of a community-focused person, if you see what I mean. The way that I find this interesting, and one of the reasons I really enjoy my job, is I like helping people get to solutions. I don't necessarily nuts and bolts it as much. Like how exactly? I'm increasingly becoming more interested in how that solution was reached. But look, I used to run a residential IT support business. I wasn't sat with people going, right, here's the license for the thing I'm about to do on your computer. Read it. It's 10 pages. I'm going to go make a cup of coffee. And then I'm not going to do it until you've read that. No, of course not. And I think I do reflect the majority of the world. It's just I happen to have much more of a brain that is in this niche community that we operate in. So it does seem weird, but it's not my original angle, I think. I think that is to answer your question. So yeah, I haven't cared whether that's good or bad. As I say, it's probably bad and I deserve a slap on the wrist.
Gary, why do you understand about licenses then? Because you're not really a developer, are you?
No, but I have integrated enough random things into projects that companies have built to know whether it's something we ought to or ought not to be doing. Like, you know, when I've done things in the past, like set up build pipelines, one of the things that I'd like to make sure is that we're not pulling in some license that we shouldn't be pulling in, or some dependency, more accurately, with some license that we shouldn't be pulling in that could compromise us as a business. Because the bottom line is that if I'm the person setting up the software build, it probably does at some point fall on me to at least do a sanity check that we're not doing something dumb.
So I suppose that is the dev part of the DevOps then?
Yeah, I guess so.
Or one of them.
It's also responsibility, isn't it? I have never been in the position that Gary has just described. Someone else is going to look at something that I suggest and go, hang on. You've got to be careful there. You know, recently we've had this with Java, for example, where we had a bit of a panic because we suddenly realized that we had to be really careful because, again, the license had changed. So something that was called something in the past, we were like, okay, we're fine to use that, right? And then suddenly you're not fine to use that and you have to be careful. And a whole bunch of people are relying on that. And we had to go through with a fine-tooth comb, working out where it might be a breach of the license now and rip it all out. But that was there was never a point where I had to say, right, I have done this and it's my responsibility that I have done this. So if it goes wrong, it's also my responsibility to mop up afterwards.
Well, that does make sense. And May, you are a professional software developer, so it makes sense why you know about it.
Well, not only that, but I'm a professional distribution developer. And they say that every Debian developer certificate should also come with a paralegal certificate. Because you just have to study things that hard.
Well, and the bottom line for me is that if HR were looking for a scapegoat, it's going to be the person that clicked deploy, right? So I feel like if I've at least done some basic due diligence to try and stop these things happening, I've got an arm in this, I suppose.
So why the hell do I know about this stuff then? Am I just sad?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
You've got to think, Joe, you have your fingers in many pies. So you interact with a broad spectrum of this community. Now, with the podcasts that are in the whole Late Night Linux family, you've got very much developers on Linux Dev Time, very much like gray-bearded sysadmins. Sorry, Jim and Alan, but that is what it is on 2.5 admins. Do you see what I mean? So you have been exposed to it, I think, especially over the last decade as things have expanded. So I can understand why you have taken an interest in it. What do you think? If you hadn't have done that and you were just a Linux tinkerer, would you care?
Probably not. I think it just comes from covering the news, really, and learning about all the controversies with source available and various license disputes and court cases and everything just forced me to learn about it.
Well, you may have noticed I piped up suddenly about the ZFS thing because, yeah, that's something I was interested in. And I have read up a bit about the CDDL and I've followed, you know, people left Canonical because they weren't happy with the position they felt they were being put in, for example. And you see that and you read that in blogs and social media and communication channels. So you start to get a flavor of it. It's just, I think you've been exposed to that a bit more. Whereas, as I say, up until more recently, I was helping people make Windows work. So, you know, yeah. It's a different thing. You know, that's just completely different. You know, I bought the computer and I do what it says territory.
Well, this has been really enlightening for me because I just assumed that if you were into Linux and stuff, you understood this stuff instinctively, but seemingly not.
I'd be interested to hear from people in my position as well, because I do think that a lot of people don't really either care or understand. And as I say, I'm not like the person you said, Gary, where they were like, I aggressively don't care.
You just passively don't care.
Well, yeah, but I clearly don't care, do I? Because otherwise I would know more about it. So I can't use that defense that I completely care. No, I obviously, Joe, you're right to say, I clearly don't care enough to have learned about it.
So has this just been a really, really boring episode then? Let us know. show@linuxafterdark.net. We better get out of here then. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. But until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Chris.
I've been Gary.
And I've been May.
See you later.